But for me, as a feminist sports sociologist, I find sport to be such a fascinating realm by which to understand and examine broader societal dynamics and cultural ideologies. And I think while some would argue that, well, you don't necessarily have to see female athletes to be a female athlete, and there might be some truth to that, although I think the research might suggest otherwise, I do think that as a cultural form, the media play a really powerful role in terms of how we understand ourselves as gendered individuals. Mm-hmm. And so the lack of media coverage of women's sports, or the types of ways that female athletes get represented in the media, is so important because it conveys not just what's happening in the sports world, but it also signifies how we understand what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman in our society. And so this goes beyond just the world of sport to our broader culture and what we think about men and women.
We've been speaking with Cheryl Cookey of Purdue University. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the Media Watch Group, based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can hear them on FAIR's website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Kelly Spivey. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
The time is now 6 p.m. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Bread and Roses.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of One Flaming Arrow, an intertribal art, music, and film festival curated by RISE, Radical Indigenous Survivance and Empowerment. This event will take place from June 2nd through the 14th at Surplus Space and multiple venues within Portland, Oregon, indigenous lands of the Chinook tribe. One Flaming Arrow seeks to evolve the dialogue of indigenous survivance by introducing a biennial art, music, and film festival. The festival advocates native expression of autonomy through the warrior spirit. It stands to disrupt the hegemonic white noise of contemporary culture by focusing on non-conventional exhibition spaces and non-neo-traditional native artists. Spaces created for the radically political, experimental, and emerging. Surplus Space, located at 3726 Northeast 7th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. For more information, visit oneflamingarrow.com. Special thanks to PICA's Precipice Fund, Caligram Foundation, and the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts.
That's what a clown laugh is.
KBOO is having a contingent in the Pride Parade, and we would love it if you would join us.
Please let us know if we can count on you to walk with us in the Pride Parade, Sunday, June 14th.
We will be meeting at 10 a.m. in the area around the North Park blocks.
Join us, wave at people, be fabulous, be KBOO.
The parade steps off promptly at 11, and all contingent members are to be together and ready by 10:30 a.m.
Please join us for a wonderful, fun, and lively day at the Pride Parade.
Call 503-231-803 and ask for Ani at extension 213 for more information.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Zoo Summer Concerts, presenting Sweet Harmony Soul, featuring Mavis Staples, Patty Griffin, and Amy Helm and the Handsome Strangers. Sweet Harmony Soul takes place Saturday, July 25th at the Oregon Zoo. Doors at 5, show at 7 p.m., and tickets and information are available at zooconcerts.com. And People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven cooperative striving to provide access to whole foods customers can trust. People's features farm-direct organic produce, bulk foods, a weekly year-round farmers market, and everyone is welcome. Located on Southeast 21st and Tibbet Street between Division and Powell. More information at peoples.coop.
marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, are touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity, globally and locally, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. I'm one of your hosts this evening, Leanne, along with one of our new collective members, Jordan Michelle.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jordan Michelle, and this is my second show on Bread and Roses. For all the reoccurring listeners, I plan on bringing good conversation on topics that I'm passionate about. I'm still pretty new to the Portland area, so I'd love to connect with more organizations that target the minority community. If you know of any organizations, please connect with me on the Bread and Roses pages on Facebook. You can also like our page and get updates and see behind the scenes photos. We are also on the web at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. If you are interested in joining the collective, everyone is welcome. No experience necessary. So to host, produce, or engineer with us, contact KBOO's volunteer manager at volunteer@kboo.org. So now that we got all the business taken care of, let's jump into tonight's show. Tonight on Bread and Roses, we are going to have a conversation about the differences between socioeconomic levels and how different classes may or may not have access to the same foods. Are grocery stores and farmers markets as accessible to minority communities as they are in majority communities? And how educated are you about labeling and differentiating what's labeled as organic versus what's actually organic? We'll explore the important factors that everyone should be aware of in their surrounding neighborhoods. Before we dive into this discussion, I would first like to introduce two guests that are visiting with us tonight who are very involved with food justice. Chelsea Biagioli is a social work major who graduated from James Madison University. She's originally from Portland, Oregon, but was raised in Virginia. Currently, she serves as a family wellness specialist at the Native American Youth and Family Center here in Oregon. And our second guest is Ali Dyer, who is a peace and conflict studies major and a pre-med student from Colgate University in upstate New York. She was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and is serving as the Food Corps service member at NEA. So, before we go to Chelsea and Ali, I first just wanted to start the conversation off by saying Portland is amazing when it comes to food. And I say this from a non-Portlander perspective. I'm from Los Angeles, California, and I don't think I personally have ever seen one garden there in my entire lifetime. So, now that I'm here in Portland, I've learned so much about planting and harvesting produce just by hanging out in the gardens with my two lovely guests for tonight. Chelsea and Ali are actually my co-workers at the Native American Youth and Family Center, and they always give me a hard time when I react to what goes on in the garden. So, for example, I'm going to sound really LA when I say this, but it actually fascinates me to see food that I eat every day actually growing out of the ground. Like, that sounds really, really weird, but being in LA and just shopping in grocery stores for most of my life, like, it's really interesting seeing the actual whole process of producing fruits and veggies. But we won't go into that. Let's go into our first question, which is for Chelsea. Hello, Chelsea.
Hello.
So, what are your experiences growing up around food, and how were you educated about gardening?
Food's definitely been something that's been in my life for as long as I can remember, because my dad is originally from Spain and his father is from Italy, and so food's always been something that we like gathered around. It was a big ordeal and we would just commune around these lavish meals, and it was a to-do every Sunday or whenever we were going to visit. Mm-hmm. And then my mom she gardens a lot, and she learned it from my grandpa, who is a Huzu farm here in Oregon. And she was a nutritionist, and so she brought these like weird, strange foods that were healthy, and I was always just like, what am I eating?
Right.
But I guess it tastes okay. It's been two separate worlds, where one's like food is a luxury and should be celebrated, and another one where it's like food should be eaten in moderation and with like these weird diet restrictions. They're not so weird, but kind of.
So you learned a lot of your terminology and different plants and things from helping your mom in the garden?
Somewhat, yeah. But I also mostly learned like farming and gardening from my college experience. I went to James Madison University, and so there's a lot of farmers out there, and so I'd volunteer on weekends or like during the week, and I would just talk to these farmers who became my friends a lot, and just like learn as much as I could because it seemed so natural to do so.
What does gardening do for you? Because I know you work in the garden constantly, so...
It like really just relaxes me. It's one of my comfort zones, and so I like going there when I'm feeling stressed out or when I'm feeling like I can't control what's going on around me. And so it's good to just be able to go to a space where I can just be me.
Right.
I guess it's like the cheesy way of putting it.
Right. I understand. Cool. And Allie, for you, what are your experiences growing up around food?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I just want to put a disclaimer out there. My views do not reflect those of Food Corps or Naya. So I'm just putting that out there. But yeah, so growing up is a little different than Chelsea's. I didn't really cook or garden at all. And, you know, like the meals were like mac and cheese and chicken fingers, you know, that good food, the not so good food. But yeah, so I didn't really start thinking like critically about food until I kind of got older and could hang out more with my Antiguan side. My dad's from the Caribbean, and Antigua is like this really tiny island that's about the same size as Portland, actually. And so I started to get to know them more, and they're on the East Coast right now. And so like going to Thanksgiving with them and like recognizing that, like how much of food was a cultural thing. And like we'd cook all this food, and the food itself would be like steaming hot, but then also have tons of like really spicy spices in it. But at the same time, like as we ate like more of the food, like everyone else like got heated, and like arguing is like really big in the culture. Yeah. And so it's like this weird like kind of parallel between like the food you eat and the culture that you come from. And so like that's when I started to get like kind of passionate about like food as a culture.
Okay. So since you said you didn't really experience gardening growing up, how did you even begin or spark an interest in it?
Yeah. So it's actually kind of a weird like twist of why I got interested in gardening. And so I started wearing my hair naturally instead of relaxing it with chemicals and stuff. And so I started looking at like researching like on Google, like, okay, so what's good for my hair when I wear it naturally? You know, I'm not putting any more of these other things in it. And it started to be like a lot of different foods. Like you think like coconut milk, bananas, avocado, like all of these great like plants that are great for your body on the outside and in the inside. And so that really got me into thinking like, okay, well, now we have like avocado, but let's also think about like rosemary as like a shampoo or something, you know, like adding different oils and herbs to your hair. And so that's kind of got me into thinking like starting to garden a little bit and like learning a little more. And now being a Food Corps service member, I get to like kind of do the whole thing with like growing different stuff like tomatoes and seeing garlic grow in the garden. I'm kind of like, I'm learning right along with the students that I teach, which is cool.
Now that's really interesting that you were talking about your own culture and your hair and just being Black, you know. It's encouraged to keep your hair natural and not to straighten it so much and to keep it away from heat, but that's for anyone, you know. But ever since I moved out here to Portland, I've gone on natural, and it's because of the people I've been surrounding with who create those kind of potions that you're talking about, but natural potions, which brings us into our next topic relating to the minority community. Do you see a difference in knowledge and the availability of food resources in minority communities compared to majority communities?
I feel like it's definitely a huge contrast between the two. They're not separate communities, but in a way they are treated as so, because we have food deserts, which Allie's going to go on a rant about, I'm sure. And just that folks have to go on a bus for like an hour and a half mm-hmm. to go to this grocery store to buy fresh produce. And that just, that's not realistic. And so they'll go to folks will go to gas stations or they'll go to the liquor store, wherever, mm-hmm. because they don't have time in their schedule to go to these grocery stores.
Right. Yeah. So what you were saying is considered a food desert. So a food desert is a 10-mile radius area where affordable and nutritious food is difficult to obtain. So in lots of minority communities, you, like you said, Chelsea, there's lots of corner stores and there's lots of fast food restaurants, but grocery stores are nowhere to be found anywhere close where you can walk or just to hop on the bus and go somewhere quick. You know, it's usually an all-day trip if someone has to do that, if they don't have a car. Society like sets up these communities where, you know, they only place food options where, you know, like fast food restaurants where they know that they're only going to be able to afford that, but then doesn't necessarily like, I don't know, allow them to access the healthier foods. So what are your experiences, Allie?
Just kind of going off what you're saying, mm-hmm. a lot of critics actually say that maybe a better term might be like food mirage or something.
So you're against food deserts?
It's just like maybe a little
explain,
bit.
Explain.
Well, just the idea that like one, like a desert is an ecosystem in and of itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to say that like deserts have food, right, for the organisms that live there,
mm-hmm.
and here there's food, but it's not real food.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then like my kind of rant on it is like. Like, calling it a food desert makes it way too much of a natural environment. Like, a desert is a natural ecosystem. Like,
right.
This is not a natural way of, like, living, you know?
Right.
These were, like, purposely put in these neighborhoods to, like, mm-hmm. purposely oppress certain people.
Very
if you want to get real.
Right. We want to go there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of my two cents about that.
Okay.
I noticed the same thing on reservations.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. It's related.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so knowing that food deserts or food mirages are prevalent in minority communities, what initiatives have you seen in these communities to help improve education regarding healthy eating and gardens and things like that? Because we don't want to discredit minority communities completely and say that, you know, every neighborhood doesn't have access to healthy food. So what have you guys seen out there?
So I know in LA there's this he calls himself the Gorilla Gardener, and he takes control of the land, essentially the unused curbsides where there's just grass. He digs them up and then he plants these wonderful free foods that folks can consume and eat and tell others, because it's a space that's for the public, so why not be utilized by the public? And I feel like that one's really catching on and just becoming a really wonderful way of sharing the wealth of good food with folks.
Okay. Yeah. LA's okay. They're making some initiatives.
Yeah. He has a TED Talk too, so check that out.
I think
it's maybe Gorilla Gardener.
Something like that.
It's cool that we showed that video. He has the TED Talk that we showed, I think all of it, to some of the students that we work with at NAIA. And they were like all really pumped about it. And he's like, you're gangsta gardeners. Like, come on. And they got so excited. Now they still say it in the garden, like all the time. Like, I'm a gangsta gardener. Like,
and the shovel is your tool, your like power or something like that. And they just love that one.
So I think communities of color, no matter what, have to be resilient. Like, we're still around. And so I think that proves that. So there's always different initiatives coming up. And, like, really what it is like, restoration of histories and stories that originated there, too.
Very cool.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. Tonight, we're talking about race, food justice, and education with our guests Chelsea Bajoli and Allie Dyer.
Very exciting. So kind of continuing what you were saying, making a connection with the youth and their everyday lives and making it fun for them to garden and be interested in gardening. What initiatives have you guys used to educate the Native community at NEA about gardening and good health?
So Allie and I work a lot with the after school program, which is a K through 8 program, and we do a lot of cooking and we do gardening, and usually the kids will come off from their transportation and they'll just like run to us and ask for a shovel and just want to work in the garden.
Wow.
We don't have to like ask them, which is pretty fabulous because it means we don't have to plan as much. But then we also work with the Early College Academy, which is the alternative high school in NEA, and we plan and coordinate with the biology students, and they designed three separate gardens: a NEA medicine wheel garden, which does a four quadrants, which is the NEA logo, and then there's a salsa garden, so salsa ingredients, and the Italian garden. And the students were able to gain skills in planning and spacing and learning what foods go. Unfortunately, though, they won't be able to taste all the great things they planted because the school season just ended. But that's all right. They'll maybe come back for the summer. And then we also work with a parent group. So we've done cooking, we've done
salve making,
we've done food storage and label reading, like what kinds of foods are mean what.
Healthy snacks that they can make for their kids.
That one they really loved.
Yeah, I think, and then within all of those programs, we try to always incorporate the fact that people have their own like food stories, and so to not come at it almost as like a strengths-based like approach, like everyone already has a connection with food, right? Everyone already has a relationship. And so we don't come in and try to say like, this is how you grow food, this is how you cook food, this is how you eat food, right? Because people already have those relationships, and so they have the knowledge, you know. We just want to like bring it to the forefront and let them share it with one another and create that space where they can like make that community, really, like community building. And so we just try to always focus on what they already have, you know, because they have the knowledge. Like, even if you don't realize it, like, that's what I realized, like, getting into gardening, like, recently, is I might not have, like, gardened when I was a kid, but it's, like, you have this almost, like, natural, like, remembering of, like, it's, like, second nature of, like, growing your own food, you know, which has been kind of cool.
Yeah, a lot of the students, they'll talk about how their grandparents or their neighbor or someone is gardening and they get to do it. And it's just always fascinating because they're like, oh, well, I want to take one home to give to so-and-so, because they'll really appreciate that. And so I love that the gifting has really been a part of the garden to their neighbor, to neighbors and family and whatnot. And it's empowering them to essentially feel comfortable doing that. I don't know how to explain that,
though. Yeah, that's great.
No, that's really cool. And just by the nature of the students and how they react to the gardening, do you see them ever turn away from like veggies, or, you know, they're always in the garden, right? So, I mean, do they ever eat the food, and how do they react to that?
It depends on the age.
They always at least like try it.
The younger kids definitely, though, jumped to it. This morning, one of the students, we pulled out a radish, and he was like, I can eat that, right? Like, that's that's mine. And I was like, well, maybe not. But they're just, like, so, the younger they are, the quicker they are to try the mint or try something new that they haven't tried yet. And if it's too spicy, they will tell you.
So do you guys agree that, like you said, starting young, getting the children accustomed to gardening and vegetables, that they'd be more willing to eat them, you know, and it will start to eliminate the childhood obesity epidemic that's going on right now, you know what I mean? I know that lots of children are resistant to veggies when their mom makes it, but if they're physically in the garden, you know, getting that workout and actually trying those veggies that they're making, I mean, growing, you know what I mean? I think that could be beneficial to their health, no?
I mean, they definitely take ownership of what they've done. Like, it's like when you make something, you always want to, like, you make your first batch of cookies, you're always going to eat those cookies, especially if you're a parent. It doesn't matter how bad they taste. And so I feel like it's the same for kids. It's the first thing they've grown, and so of course they're going to eat it. Why wouldn't they? They did that with their two hands.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's important to, like, it's even if it's not having, like, some long-lasting, like, tangible effect, it's, like, getting the kids to think about food, like, in their daily lives, right? Think about not just, like, this, like, weird sitting at a TV and just, like, mindlessly eating it, you know? It's making them, like, conscious of, like, the food that goes into their body even without them, like, having to think really hard about it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, like, getting physical, like, getting dirty and planting some stuff and, yeah. So I think it's exciting to kind of see them thinking more about food because, right, you know, it's everywhere.
It is. All right. We're going to take a quick music break right now. And so, yeah, stay tuned.
See no changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill him, he's a hero. Get it to the kids who the hell cares. One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship him, don't let him deal with brothers. Give him guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brothers, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but then it changed. That's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah. That's just the way it is. Things will
never
be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
I see no changes. All I see is racist faces. Misplaced hate makes disgrace to races. We under. I wonder what it takes to make this one better place. Let's erase the wasted. Take the evil out the people. They'll be acting right. Cause both black and white and smoke tonight. And the only time we chill is when we kill each other. It takes guilt to be real time to heal each other. And although it seems evident, we ain't ready to see a black president. It ain't a secret, don't conceal the fact. The penitentiary's packed and it's filled with blacks. But some things will never change. Try to show another way, but staying in the dope game. Now tell me what's a mother to do. Being real don't appeal to the brother in you. You gotta operate the easy way.
I made a G today.
But you made it in a sleazy way. Selling it back to the kids.
I gotta get paid.
Well, hey. Well, that's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh, yeah.
Hear me.
Oh, come on,
come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. Just the way it is. Oh yeah.
We gotta make a change. It's time for us as a people to start making some changes. Let's change the way we eat. Let's change the way we live. And let's change the way we treat each other. You see, the old way wasn't working, so it's on us to do what we gotta do to survive. And still I see no changes. Can a brother get a little peace? It's war on the streets and a war in the Middle East. Instead of war on poverty, they got a war on drugs so the police can bother me. And I ain't never did a crime I ain't have to do. But now I'm back with the facts, giving it back to you. Don't let them jack you up, back you up, crack you up, and pimp smack you up. You gotta learn to hold your own. They get jealous when they see you with your mobile phone. But tell the cops I can't touch this. I don't trust this. When they try to rush, I bust this. That's the sound number two. You say it ain't cool. But it raised no fool. And as long as I stay black, I got a stage strap. And I never get to lay back. Cause I always got to worry about the payback. Some buck that I roughed up way back. Coming back after all these years. Right, tat, 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 tat. That's the way it is.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh, yeah. That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same.
just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Something will never change.
All right, that was Changes by Tupac. Don't you love it? Tupac freak sh- That was Changes by Tupac.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. Our host tonight is new Bread and Roses member Jordan Michelle, doing an excellent PRO professional job. Tonight we're talking about food justice, race, and education with our guests Chelsea Bajoli and Ali Dyer from NEA.
All right. So for those just tuning in, like Leanne said, we're talking about race and food justice, and we wanted to kind of finish up our conversation and how does race factor into food justice in Portland? What do you guys have to say about that?
So one thing, sorry, I'm a little nervous. one thing that Allie and Jordan and I at work talk about all the time is mm-hmm. just about the gentrification in Portland, because it's just so obvious that it's just white.
Right.
Right? Like, you can't really ignore it. I'm sorry. You just can't ignore it. And like in Alberta, for example, used to be predominantly black folks. Mm-hmm. And now it's like the hip place to be. Mm-hmm. There's a Salt and Straw. Mm-hmm. There's like
tourists everywhere.
There's that, there's like bookstores everywhere. Right. It's great. It's like a fun place to be. But at the same time, if you think about what it used to be, it's kind mm-hmm. of sad.
Mm-hmm.
And
painful.
I, like, one of the main transitions that happened was like a new Seasons came in and took the grocery store that used to be there. And so folks were just like, I can't afford this food. Mm-hmm. Where am I going to go now for food? Mm-hmm. And instead, and then all these hip folks came into town and they were just, and so it kind of created this sense of unbelonging. Like, I'm just assuming this, mm-hmm. but like a sense of unbelonging and like, what's happening to my right. neighborhood mm-hmm. that's been the same for so long. And now suddenly it's like, I see these people who are no longer my neighbors, mm-hmm, and it's just like mm-hmm. mind-boggling to me that.
And they're looking at me yeah. like I don't belong. Right. You know?
It's just, I don't know. It's just like one of those things where it's like the food was the first thing to move, and that's mm-hmm. the first thing that created that change. Mm-hmm. And so it just proves once again that food can be a catalyst for change, whether good or bad. Mm-hmm. In totally. This case, not the best.
Yeah.
Not the best. Yeah.
And the grocery stores that used to be in, you know, Northeast Portland used to be, like, culturally specific? Or were they, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, okay, so that's, yeah, that's what I thought. And, yeah, like you said, New Seasons is a lot more pricey. Rent is going up and mortgages, all that. It's, you know, it's just really expensive to live in Portland. I'm not even from Portland, but, my boyfriend and his family, they moved out for 8 years, came back, and they were just like, what happened here? You know? Yeah. You know, they would see, you know, white people walking down the street, you know, with their dogs or on their bikes at 10 o'clock at night. And 8 years ago, that would be dangerous, you know, because it used to be the heart of the hood, you know? Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's transformed into nothing negative, but it's like, you know, what happened to all the original residents, you know, what kind of environments are they living in, and, you know, what are the disparities that they're going through, and from what I've seen, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah, it feels like people are being pushed out.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then it's like, it's also maddening because people like turn around and be like, well, why don't more people of color like care about local food systems? Mm-hmm. Why don't more people of color care about gardening and mm-hmm. stuff? And it's like, well, look what's happening. Like, a new season is pushing people, is like adding to people being like displaced from their like community, right? Mm-hmm. And like, what does like new season stand for? Like, really great things. But to them, it's just like, okay, so that means like local food is a white person thing and like a wealthy mm-hmm. white person thing. And like growing your own food is that, like caring about food is that, like healthy food about like what goes into your body is like, they're just disconnected from that. Mm. And so it just creates this weird, like tense environment where like, okay, but like, if you're taking that stance, how can we like nourish our community then? Mm-hmm. If being healthy becomes a white wealthy person thing,
right.
Where are we left?
What are we gonna do?
Right. You know,
how do we, right. And it's all about that labeling thing, you know, black people feel like because they've kind of been pushed out, they don't want to conform to what's new now. You know, they don't want to ride the bikes everywhere. They don't want to, you know, have gardens. They just kind of feel like they're conforming.
Resisting.
Right.
They want to resist.
They want to resist. Right. Exactly. So now it's that conflict on, okay, how do we take care of ourselves in the situation that we're in Portland? What are we to do? You know? And I think that part of it should be, let's not look at it as a white thing. Let's look at it as we need to get healthy, and we shouldn't take care of ourselves because of what we think is the norm, or I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, what examples would you guys have for the minority communities and to improve their health?
I think that's a good question. I think that starting with schools, maybe mm-hmm. just because we're in school, so we, mm-hmm. that's like what's on my mind. But mm-hmm. I think starting with schools, because I mean, we got to go to school. Students mm-hmm. got to go to school, and so mm-hmm. I think getting like more school gardens in school, where it's like that becomes our playground, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so having that even accessible, like being able mm-hmm. to grow your own food accessible, and like a way of like learning certain skills mm-hmm. that you can maybe even make into a career, right? Mm-hmm. Especially mm-hmm. in a place like Portland.
Mm-hmm. And we work in a school that, you know, has a lot of minority, and I think that just from based on our own experiences that they've been receptive to it, you know. You know, the three of us have started a Food for Freedom Club, and because we relate it to music that they listen to and media, it's what interests them, and it's mm-hmm. what gets it sparks their interest, and they're more willing to participate and be engaged in those kind of food conversations versus us just making it really straight out of the book mm-hmm. type, you know, interacting with each other and cooking and together and all those other things. So
you can go.
and it really comes down though to like a racial justice issue, like larger than just a food justice one, because you look at like all of the research on school gardens mm-hmm. and like incorporating them into different like academic subjects, you have like way higher academic achievements, way higher attendance in schools, like, and then what does that translate to, like being able to take a job you want to take when you're older, right? Being mm-hmm. able to put yourself out there in positions you probably wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes down to it, like school gardens can be an incredible tool for mm-hmm. change among mm-hmm. communities of color too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not just on the food side or the health side.
On that note, made me think of something. We've had guests on Bread and Roses from doing garden programs in our prisons.
Oh, wow.
And there are all these intangible outcomes with the people, incarcerated individuals who are in the gardens. It's therapy, mm-hmm. healing, mm-hmm. and it calms them, you know,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
they're less inclined to get amped up once they mm-hmm. go back inside. And mm-hmm. and also, like, just greater than that, it's like this hopeful, the sense of hope and nature, you know, mm-hmm. all that restorative stuff of nature. So mm-hmm. I think you're right on. Get that in schools as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something about touching that soil, man. Really just makes you relaxed.
I like the way you put that.
It's good for your immune system, too, I heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Handling the earth.
And you get that exercise and you don't even know it. You know?
Yeah. Well, sometimes you do. It depends what you're doing.
Oh, true. Weeding? That takes the life out of me.
It takes the life out of them, too.
Right.
Oh! But going back to the club, I just wanted to, because you were talking about how we can make it more inclusive for folks of color.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the fact that we asked all the students what they wanted of the club and what mm-hmm. they felt was important, and they got to decide the name, and they were able to make those choices. I felt like they mm-hmm. felt more invested. So I feel like it's not something that the outside can do. I think it needs to be a collaboration with folks about, like, what folks mm-hmm. want included mm-hmm. and, like, how they want to be. Like, it's just, like, has to be a conversation rather than, like, a, well, we're going to do
dictate
this for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So many programs are, like, top down.
Exactly.
Yeah, it has to be meaningful to the people who mm-hmm.
yeah.
are engaged. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or else it's not going to stick.
Right. Mm-hmm. Letting them choose what to plant, you know? Mm-hmm. I know you guys do that with them a lot. And letting them be a witness to seeing what they have produced is also, like, inspiring, and makes them want to be more involved with gardening
and not doing it in like a ahistorical way, like being cognizant of like the traumas of at the individual level mm-hmm. and then like also like historical traumas, like thinking back to both like Native communities and Black communities and mm-hmm. how they were like disconnected from their land, from the mm-hmm. food that they knew, mm-hmm. and like forced to work the land. And that, you know, that's a traumatic thing that's like in our bodies, you know, it's passed down generations and generations. And so mm-hmm. figuring out how to deal with that on a lower level too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Now let's move on to the next topic. So I've noticed being out here in Portland that a lot of restaurants offer vegan and gluten-free options. Do you think that being vegan is a pressured trend in Portland and across the country? And do you think it actually benefits our local farmers and our health, being vegan?
Oh, wow. What a question.
Touchy stomach.
Well, I guess I'll just like put mm-hmm. a clarifier out there that like, you know, food is a complicated issue and like diet especially.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't really say that one diet is bad or good, mm-hmm. like essentially.
Understood.
Everyone has, each diet has like a different effect on each person.
Very true.
But is veganism great?
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know. That mm-hmm. I think the idea of going back to like a plant-based diet has like a lot of merit, but mm-hmm. I think that when it's co-opted by companies that are pumping out things as vegan when they're really just like processed junk that's just as bad as any other mm-hmm. diet, like mm-hmm. come on, like
right. I was thinking about that too. You know, I go to the grocery store and I see like Morningstar products and I'm just like you know,
maple sausage patties, what up?
But at the same time, just right. like that looks exactly like real meat. But is that really good for you? Does it have chemicals and stuff? Are they using fake? You know, I don't know. That's why we're having this conversation. You know, is it really mm-hmm. the right way to go?
Yeah, there's like this whole superfoods fad where like you bring in the ancient whatever from South America or the holy foods of like the Asian countries. It's just like, okay, so you're gonna use all this oil to bring these foods that are really important for the communities that you're taking them from because you want to benefit your body. So it's just right. like,
and then
is
it's not
cool though.
Right.
Is it cool?
Right. And then it's kind of taking away from the local farmers here in Portland. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we want to support them, mm-hmm. but you know, that's taking from other countries, like you were saying. That's food miles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's unsustainable technically. And you know, vegan and
right.
living that kind of lifestyle. You know, it's a very sustainable lifestyle. But technically, is it?
Right.
You know.
Like in quinoa. Quinoa is this like huge. I love quinoa, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I love quinoa.
And it's popular.
It's super
right
popular,
now.
Yeah. And it's also not that expensive for mm. a protein source. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things where folks in Bolivia and Peru can't really afford to eat quinoa anymore, even though it's a staple in their diet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like
mm-hmm.
one of those things mm-hmm. where it's scary because now they don't really have the same resources to bring in other foods that they mm-hmm. can then eat. And so what are we really doing to other people? Are we supporting them?
Mm-hmm.
Are we support? Like, it's just something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I do wonder, like, why is it that, because, you know, I'm from Los Angeles and I, you know, never see vegan and gluten-free options on menus like I do out here in Portland. You
really?
Know,
yeah.
I really don't, honestly. And I know I have family in Ohio too, and they don't really have that kind of option. So is it, like, what is it about Portland that it's like that? You guys even know?
I have no idea. It's just booty central.
Yeah, Portland likes to be weird, and mm-hmm. you know, it started off weird, and now it's getting cool and unhealthy for you.
Weird in a cool way. I don't even know how to explain
it. It's like this weird. It's almost like a fetish of like around food. That's what Portland is. It's like we got the strip clubs and
you
then we got
so
we fetishized the
right.
food, right? They're connected in the brain. Let's be real. Like that's what it is.
I mean,
I just figured it out,
the
guys.
Strip club, so.
Go in.
That is brilliant. You're so right.
Well, hope we're not offending any of our listeners.
That has never happened on Bread and Roses.
All right. Our next question. What are some labels that we should pay particular attention to, you know, when we're grocery shopping?
So the ones that say fresh and natural, mean nothing. Weird. Where can you get married in that when there's no guidelines anywhere telling you there's like no way for companies to be like, with this is harvested between this time and that. There's none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so saying fresh or natural is essentially nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And which is really crazy to think about, because you're obviously drawn to it if it has green letters, or if it
exactly
has like the picture of the beautiful fruit that's like unblemished, and it's just, but it's just crazy that it means nothing, right? Like, if, I don't know, just one of those things that blows my mind. And then light and low fat just means like a low percentage of fat. Which, what does that really mean? It means more chemicals. Let's be real.
Right. Diet How are we soda? Taking out that?
Yeah.
Fat?
Diet soda. Mm-hmm. What's in diet soda? If there's not sugar, what's in there that makes it so sweet?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Very true.
And that's like the same type of idea with like made with real fruit. It could have like trace amounts of real fruit and still be totally legal putting that on a label.
All right. We actually have a third guest that wants to chime in on this conversation. Her name's Jasmine. Hello, Jasmine.
Hello?
Hello? Hi, Jasmine.
Hi. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
Great. Thank y'all so much for having this segment. I'm just, like, so happy to hear this on the radio.
Yes. What is it that you'd like to talk about?
Okay, well, I work with Groundwork Portland in Emerson Street Garden. It's a community garden in Northeast Portland on 822 Northeast Emerson Street. And we are having a launch party for the garden next week, June 19th, Friday, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Free food, drinks, and translation. And I would just really love it if we could have as many people of color, especially Black people, there, because I think that our communities are the ones that are hit the hardest and first by the negative impacts of food justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to hear like what people in our community like would like from the garden, like for as far as workshops, outreach, if they want to host things on their own, like host their own events there or whatever. Like we want to make sure that it's a space that really caters to the needs that, that people ask for.
Nice. So tabling is okay at this event?
Not necessarily. So it would be, but we are just so small.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can definitely bring any materials that you like to, and we would definitely encourage that. But it is a smaller space. Once the space is done, it's going to be used as a training center, like cooking classes and workshops and things of that vein. And then we are going to expand to other sites so that things we have taught can be used at the other sites that will be focused more on food production.
Nice. Perfect. Thank you for calling in. You want to go ahead and repeat what the event is and then where and what time one more time?
Absolutely. It's Emerson Street Gardens launch party. It's June 19th, next Friday, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. We have free food, drinks, and Spanish translation, and everybody's welcome.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much, Jasmine.
Thank you so much. You guys have a good weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
See ya.
Take care.
You're listening to Bread and Roses. Jordan Michelle is a new Bread and Roses host, doing an exceptional job. I'm Leanne. Tonight we're talking about race, education, and food justice with our guests from NEA, Chelsea Bajoli and Ali Dyer.
Wonderful. Thank you, Leanne. So that was awesome. So we got that.
Cool.
Hey, thanks again, Jasmine. So just to continue what we're talking about as far as green labeling. Green labeling is considered when a company or organization spends more time and money claiming to be green through advertising and marketing than actually implementing business practices that minimize environmental impacts. So like Chelsea and Ali were saying, it may be labeled all natural or it may be labeled organic, but it might not necessarily be that. You know, it may be a very small percentage of juice in your all natural orange juice, or you know, things like that. So it's very important that you pay attention to the little details and that you look up like certified green labels, you know, and that you know, the color green itself just draws you in, you know, when you're trying to eat healthy and you're looking for organic products. That's not always the case. So yes, do we?
Yeah, and something I'd kind of want to add to that is while we're being like critical of like the labels, like also being critical of like what we feel like we need to buy, like, and thinking about like how corporations and companies have had like a say on like what a balanced diet looks like in America, right? And like even just the other day I was like, Mom, why do we have like 3 cartons of milk in our fridge? I don't even understand. Like, I don't drink milk. My dad doesn't drink milk. Why do we have 3 cartons of milk? And she was just like, I don't know. It's just like this weird thing. Like, when I go to the grocery store, I gotta get like bread, eggs, and milk, like always. And I'm like, Why is that, you know? Like, and I feel like a lot of people have that pull towards, like, either those three things or something else, you know? And so kind of being, like, thinking, like, through, like, why do I really need to be eating or drinking this? I think that's a good step.
That is. And then this is also to encourage all of our listeners to shop at farmers markets, because that is definitely guaranteed that is organic. Most of the time, correct?
Chelsea. Well, not always, but it's definitely encouraged to shop at farmers markets and to support your farmers, especially since there's such a wide variety here in Portland. It's like the farmers mecca, it seems sometimes.
Oh my goodness, yes. Every Saturday they have one, like in different areas of Portland. That's awesome.
And some of the whole week. It's amazing. Right. I love it. And it's just so great because the Pacific Northwest just has so many things to offer that are local, like nuts. Hazelnuts are awesome. You can make your own Nutella. Come on. And then you have like fruits and so many apples and seafood and just so many things that you can access that you don't have to get shipped in from Maine, like lobster. Because you can just eat stuff that's from here and it tastes better and it makes you feel better most of the time, unless you have a diet restriction.
Yeah. And the majority of, I think like the average age of a farmer in Oregon, I want to say it's over 60. Like, it's the average age, right?
65 for like the U.S.
It's crazy. So like, where are my youth at? Let's like, you know, get involved in this.
No, I feel you on that. And you know, for all my listeners who are Portland natives, you know, I definitely don't want to knock, you know, Portland at all. Like, I've loved my stay here, and the food, like I said in the beginning, is amazing. Like, I went to a soul food restaurant and I felt like it was healthy fried chicken. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'd never leave a restaurant feeling heavy or, you know, like I overdid it. You know, and it could just be the way you guys cook your foods. I don't know, but, you know.
It could be that we don't have In-N-Out in Portland.
Oh, and that's the other thing. Like, I feel like there aren't a lot of mainstream restaurants out here. Like, I don't know. Like, well, at least we're
in the city limits. Yeah, maybe, I would agree with
yes,
that.
Yes. You know, I feel like there's a lot of, like, personally owned, like, restaurants and lots of cafes. You know, it's not like you can go to Olive Garden and Red Lobsters. Like, you know, it's down the street, you know? And, and again, when I lived in Los Angeles, those places were everywhere on every single corner, you know, and then I moved into the outskirts of Los Angeles in the suburbs, and you know, it was a lot different, and my knowledge of healthier eating changed dramatically moving into other areas. So it just goes to show, like, it really is like the disparities between minority and majority communities. Like, it's so relevant, so there, it's existent. And yeah, like, my whole family dynamics of eating changed when I moved into a white neighborhood, and it just grew from there. But yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah.
And like, I feel like the biggest thing is still like working on, like, the gentrification has to be like one of the number one issues when we talk about food justice in Portland, especially because we can't be pushing people out and then being like, why won't you come to my community garden? You know, it has to be, it's not an isolated issue. It's not.
I know.
And for anyone listening who wants to really dig into Portland's history, our state's history, what where gentrification has impacted our city for a century, decades, check out the work of Walida Imarisha. She has done, you can get videos of her presentations on YouTube. She breaks it down. She's awesome. Such a great historian and a real educator. She's trying to reach us white people and teach us, and she's trying to educate all of us. So we have to know the history, what happened in this town. my jaw hit the floor when I learned, and it didn't pick up again for weeks. I mean, I walked around in a daze just looking at my city with different eyes. So I would really check her out again. Walidha, W-A-L-I-D-A-H, Imarisha, I-M-A-R-I-S-H-A. She's all over the internet.
And I just wanted to point out, I do appreciate Jerry and Chris who called in to support the topic of tonight. If we ever do this topic again, I will definitely make sure that the lines are open for people to call in and join us on this topic, because I know it's, you know, a big topic and we can go all day talking about this. So I appreciate your efforts in reaching out and your support. So we wanted to close out the evening with one last song. I would like to thank Chelsea and Allie and Leanne for helping me out with this topic tonight. Thank you guys.
Hope anytime. Thanks for having us.
Join me again one day. And thank you, Ian, in the control room. Appreciate it, taking all those calls. All right, we're gonna close out this last song with, it's called Food Fight by
Sea Suns or Earth Amplified. And so it's actually a video that is we showed to our students in our Food for Freedom Club, and it just touches on like a bunch of different food justice topics, whether it's like seed rights, whether it's, you know, food deserts or food mirages, you know, let's be educated. No, I'm kidding. But but yeah, it's just an awesome video. So check out the video on YouTube, but we're going to play the audio here. But the video has some like really like jarring visuals that everyone should check out.
Look it up on YouTube. All right, everyone, have a great evening and a wonderful weekend. Thanks.
Ouch. You know what? Why don't you get up and go to the store and bring back some food?
Labels on the food that you cook. Just say no to the cocoa box. Cause when you Google the ingredients, you might get got. Is your milk on drugs? Cause your brain on Fox. Factory farm and spawn in the matrix plot. Globally warm and the saw enough cows and ox. Driving the climate, driving the Hummer or not. Drive in like a drive-by. E. coli, serve super size with a side of super lies. So tell me, what's more gangster than that? Bullets and burgers to both blades, burners to black. Breakfast is a little like Texas. Petro's everything that you're eating on. My pet store is backyard like Cheech and Chong. My school lunch, pack a punch, food fighters on. That's what the streets them say. That's what my leash them say. That's what the Babylon say. Been cold up on the lips and get popped the same way now. That's what the Pentagon say. That's what the general say. That's what the empire say. But death down your throat, you get dropped the same way.
What's beef? Beef is when you 12 years old and obese. Clogged arteries, can't see your own feet. Until you up in ICU, guaranteed to be in ICU. From that processed food, suicide is a suicide. Don't want no microwaves, no pesticides. Fast food, slow death in disguise. It's the wild, wild westernized world of deception and lies. What's beef? Beef is when you starve in a famine. Nothing won't grow when the land stays barren. Pollution in the river, mercury in the salmon. What sense do it make to be at war with the planet? We at war for the mind so impressionable. Instead of vegetables, we reach for Red Bulls.
This KBOO program was made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts. Freshly prepared foods with an international flavor and local music every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music. PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be the sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 2nd through the 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Blues Festival includes cruises like the Blue Bayou Cruise, the Rock the Boat Dance Cruise, Drifting Blues Cruise, and the Sail On Sister Cruise, as well as after-hour performances featuring Galactic, Charmaine Neville, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and the Paladins. Again, that's the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Thursday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th at the Waterfront Park in Portland. For more information, go to kboo.com.